right, Mr. Chair.
We'll call the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation to order. This is February 20th, 2017, and welcome everybody to the committee. We've got a number of bills we're going to deal with today. We're going to start off with a work session on Senate Bill 35, which we had before us last week. So we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 35. You want to refresh us, Patrick?
I think, Mr. Chair, we heard this bill a week ago today. This measure increases the threshold amount that must be met before a person is required to submit a motor vehicle accident report to DMV. When we had the meeting last week, we had some testimony indicating need for a second amendment, this dash two amendment, as it were, Mr. Chair, changes the threshold amount in the bill from $3,000 to $2,500, and it also maintains the existing language in the in statute related to the adjustment to inflation, Mr. Chair. And with the dash two amendment, the measure has minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Okay. Senator Thompson?
I move the dash two amendment.
Senator Thompson has moved the dash two amendment to Senate Bill 35. Is there a discussion on that motion? Is there any opposition to the motion? That's adopted. Senator?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 35 adopted or with the dash two amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 35 as amended by the dash two amendments to the floor with a due pass. Discussion, Senator?
Yeah, I have a question. It's not 100% about this bill, but how come when you have an accident report, you can't do it online? How come you have to go down to the facility?
Where is she? Don't we have somebody from?
I think she left.
Oh, there you are. Welcome, Amy.
Chair Byron, members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. I tried to sit in a spot where you wouldn't see me, but
I saw you come in.
So the roundabout answer to your question is, in not too long a time, I think you will be able to file those online because this body approved funding for us to retool our computer system. You did that in 2015, and we're in process. So I would say for the moment it's an antiquated computer system that we can't do very much online, but we're hoping to fix that in the near future.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, that transformation project is going really well so far, and the department's doing a great job.
So that would be the chair of our IT committee. So we're moving off of COBOL pretty soon, huh?
Very soon. Very soon.
Thank you, Amy.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Hearing none, is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, Senate Bill 35 as amended by the dash two amendments is moved to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation, and Senator Monroe would like to carry that, so we will close on that. Senators, we don't have the paperwork on 37 yet, Senate Bill 37, so we won't deal with that. Maybe we'll get it by the end of the session, or the end of today's session.
Not the end of the session.
You heard it.
That would be before the end of session. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 109. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 109 establishes the Task Force on Statewide Earthquake Insurance for Residential Property. This task force would sunset on December 31st, 2018. The measure has an emergency clause, would take effect upon passage. This measure has subsequent referrals to the Senate General Government and Accountability Committee, which we've been told by the Senate President's Office is true of all bills that create task forces this session, and then also has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means, Mr. Chair. We also have in hand, we just received this morning, a dash one amendment. The dash one amendment adds two additional members to the task force, a county commissioner and an emergency manager.
All righty, let's see. Mike Harriman.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, you can. Go ahead, Senator.
What is the cost? Is this going to be paid members or not?
The measure, Mr. Chair, Senator Gerard, the measure does not provide for reimbursement of members.
And so it's going from 15 members to 17, or is that? Okay.
Mr. Harriman. There you are. Welcome, Mike.
Chair Byers, a member of the committee, I'm Mike Harriman, the State Resilience Officer in the Office of Governor Kate Brown. I'm honored to speak with you all today. The State Resilience Officer position was created in 2015 with House Bill 2270, and I was confirmed by the full Senate on May 25th, 2016. The National Academy of Science in 2012 described resiliency as the ability to prepare and plan for, absorb, recover from, and more successfully adapt to actual or potential adverse events. Oregon's event is the Cascadia Subduction Zone, and the complete rupture, the last complete rupture was January 1700, 317 years ago. In February 2013, the Oregon Seismic Safety Policy Advisory Commission, known as OSPAC, presented to the 77th Legislative Assembly the Oregon Resiliency Plan, as directed based on House Resolution 3 adopted in April of 2011. OSPAC offered the following definition of seismic resilience goal. Oregon citizens will not only be protected from life-threatening physical harm, but because of risk reduction measures and pre-disaster planning, communities will recover more quickly and with less continuity and vulnerability following a Cascadia Subduction Zone earthquake and tsunami. The resiliency plan focuses on providing legislators with information and data so that you can make critical investments each biennium, starting with 2013 session and continuing over the next several biennia to build up the resilience of the state's infrastructure. Early investments that have started are the building blocks for future investments, but make no mistake, we still have a long way to get there. A major earthquake would seriously damage the property of thousands of homeowners in Oregon. A 1999 study done by the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries estimated over 80,000 homes would be damaged or destroyed. In 2011, FEMA conducted their modeling process for Oregon, and as many as 440,000 residential buildings could be damaged by an earthquake. The population centers along the I-5 corridor may have the highest number of damaged residential buildings. Over 300,000 residential buildings may suffer some level of structural damage. The majority of damaged residential buildings may only sustain minor structural damage and may be immediately inhabitable after an earthquake. And roughly 5% of the damaged buildings may sustain moderate structural damage requiring repair before it's safe to occupy. In the 2011 Great East Japan earthquake, there were over 400,000 homes damaged or destroyed. Recovery from a major earthquake will be even more costly since only 20% of homes in Oregon have earthquake insurance, and there's not a residential seismic retrofitting program currently offered in Oregon. One possible investment is with Senate Bill 109, Oregon's Earthquake Insurance Task Force Bill. Following the model used by the California Earthquake Authority, Senate Bill 109, if passed, would bring together industry leaders, state agencies, and the public to determine best practices for possible legislation for Oregon. Senate Bill 109 has three primary focused areas. All insurance companies doing business in Oregon to offer earthquake insurance to residential owners, including multifamily units. Having the option to purchase earthquake insurance would be a great mitigation effort for the state and could help reduce Oregon's possible disaster deductible being considered by FEMA at this time when public assistance is being requested. To look at this California Earthquake Authority model, for residential incentive programs. One such program is where homeowners that make seismic rehabilitation investments to their home can receive a one-time state tax credit, and then also other recommendations the task force would make. I thank you for the opportunity to testify, and would be happy to answer any questions to the best of my ability.
Thank you, Mike. Question, Senator?
Yeah, the question I have is the scale that we're talking about. If we have a total unzip, yeah, I mean, the numbers that you gave for the number of houses, if you compare that to Katrina, I mean, Katrina is going to look like a drop in the bucket. My question is, tell me an insurance company that can afford to pay out if such an event occurs. And the last thing I want is line 26, where the state's on the hook for it. At least that's the way that I read lines 26 through 28. Evaluate the feasibility of establishing a state-run, self-funded insurer or a hybrid public-private insurance authority that provides earthquake insurance for residential property owners.
Chair Byers, Senator Garrard, that is the first part of that is a model following the California Earthquake Authority. So if the task force was formed, we would like to take a deep dive in it and see if it's even feasible to bring into Oregon. On your first part of the question about the destruction, yeah, there's going to be a lot of destruction in Oregon once the Cascade Subduction Zone unzips, as they say. But there will be a tremendous amount of recovery efforts going on. And anything that we can do to help mitigate homeowners to stay in their communities, to be part of that recovery effort, is important. And this is just one possibility effort to bring the community and the industry together. As far as I don't know of any one insurance company, but I understand in California over 23 of the insurance companies offer earthquake insurance to the state of California to homeowners. It's not a mandatory program, but it is offered to every homeowner who then has the choice to decide whether they'd like to take them up on that offer or not.
Go ahead.
Would you be opposed if we were to remove lines 26 through 28?
Senator Byers, or Chair Byers, Senator Garrard? No. Would not be opposed to that at all.
You're talking about page one? Which page are you talking about?
Page
26.
Page one.
Page one.
Page one.
The state run self-funding insurance.
Or maybe just
does it really matter? They look at whatever they want to anyway.
I mean, this the task force center is just to evaluate the options. It doesn't start anything.
Yeah, but I've seen task force that it depends on who's on the task force as to what conclusion. And the last thing I want is for the state to be on the hook if an earthquake hits for residential property. So when you're establishing a state-run insurance program, that doesn't sit well with me.
Okay, hear you. Others? Questions? Thank you, Mike.
Thank you very much.
Commissioner Leanne Thompson?
Thanks, Mike.
Welcome.
Thank you, sir. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, my name is Leanne Thompson, formerly known as Tightwad Thompson when Senator Monroe and I first knew each other, but now functioning as a community volunteer in Clatsop County. I'm a CERT, Ham Radio, Red Cross, Medical Reserve Corps. What I look for is how to help people in my community be more capable and more responsible. So that's the point of view that I have when I approach this bill. As a Clatsop County Commissioner, I'm also co-chair of the Association of Oregon County's Public Safety Subcommittee with Judge Steve Schaefer from Gillum County. And I thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of Senate Bill 109. We do appreciate the leadership of Mike Harriman and his strong partnership with county commissioners and emergency managers around the state. We think his efforts will make sure Oregonians are better prepared for disasters. Over the past year, AOC has focused on resiliency. Counties have paired up to help each other during disasters in a new sister county program. We also created this statewide subcommittee that I co-chair to keep conversations continuing in emergency preparedness, response, and recovery. Our state is frequently challenged by natural, technological, and human-caused disasters, and we believe that AOC can be a convening and problem-solving entity dedicated to improving our communities. We must also consider the cross-section of issues that relate to emergency management and preparedness. We have public health, we have land use, we have housing, public safety, transportation, and many others. I want you to know that 101 south of Seaside was down to one lane again on Saturday because of the flooding, so it's an everyday occurrence with us most of the time. Coordination and collaboration across these disciplines is important. Along with our support for the bill, we would like to propose a -1 amendment, which would add a county commissioner and an emergency manager to the task force. Again, the idea is how do we help individual citizens in communities be more capable and more responsible. We believe it's important for our two organizations to be represented in these important discussions, and we thank you to Mike Harriman for his support of this concept. I thank you. If you have questions for me, I'm happy to address them.
Thank you, Commissioner. Questions?
Senator. Just kind of a comment. I have a place over on the coast, so I think it's essential to be prepared as best that we can. But the size of the unzip is, I mean, it's going to be really catastrophic. So what bothers me, and I asked the gentleman before, is, you know, establishing a state-run earthquake insurance. I mean, if that happened, the state could no more pay out for that than the man on the moon. So I'm trying to, would you be okay if we would eliminate that from the scope of which you look, or is that a problem?
Chair Beyer, Senator Girard, I have no problem with constraining the scope. I want us to get busy talking about this and solving the problem. At one point in my life, I was licensed to sell insurance, and I understand some risk assessment, which is a great motivator for me. I'm devoted to improving our capacity, and I don't want to have a scope creep where we take on something that we can't satisfy. So I understand your concern, and I agree with your suggestion.
Okay, great, thanks.
Mr. Chair, more?
No, I'm good.
That's it?
Mm-hmm.
Any other? Senator?
You know, we have a lot of disadvantages when the big one comes, but we also have some advantages. Most residential homes in Western Oregon are frame. Mm-hmm. Frame homes actually withstand an earthquake a lot better than anything made out of masonry or involving masonry. They shake a lot. If you have a tile roof like I do on my house, it might come off. But generally speaking, those houses will still be at least somewhat habitable if they don't catch fire. The biggest threat that earthquakes bring to frame homes actually is fire if they have natural gas and it catches on fire. But it strikes me that where we're looking at the earthquakes that have happened around the world, many of them that were devastating in terms of loss of life had masonry buildings. And those masonry buildings just crumble in a heap and people die. Whereas I told my wife, you know, that our house would probably withstand it as long as it doesn't catch on fire.
Good comments.
Good to see you again.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That is all I have to signed up to testify on Senate Bill 109. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify? Seeing none, we do not have the paperwork.
I think she did.
Oh, hold on. I won't close.
I'll just make a comment.
Please.
So I'm testifying for myself. I was in Christchurch where they had
your name,
Jody Weiser. I was in Christchurch where they had a much smaller earthquake than we're expecting. You know what? This government is fixing people's houses because they knew it was coming, and they put 1% of their budget away for years. Now, they will have depleted that budget, but that's what they did in preparation. We don't have the money to do it, but that's the way we should be thinking. We know there's, you know, we know it's coming, and we're not preparing for it. And it's going to be our infrastructure, not just people, not individuals' homes, that it's going to be destroyed. So, thank you, Jody.
Anybody else? Alrighty, seeing none, we will close public hearing on Senate Bill 109, and we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 328. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 328 makes biomass facilities that were registered with the Western Renewable Energy Generation Information System on or after January 1st, 2011, eligible for renewable energy certificates. It declares an emergency, so it would take effect upon passage and signature by the governor. There's no amendment, no fiscal, and no revenue impact, Mr. Chair.
All right. So, Amanda Dalton and Mr. Sanger.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, for the record, Amanda Dalton. I'm here today on behalf of Biomass One just to really walk you through the bill that's in front of you. REGIS, as we kind of commonly refer to it, is the Western Renewable Energy Generation Information System, serves as somewhat of an online database to gather credits, renewable energy credits generated throughout the western side of the country. Senate Bill 1547, which some of you may remember from February, removed a limitation on pre-95 biomass renewable energy certificates, or RECs. Previous legislation had required that these RECs be banked until 2026, January 1 of 2026. 1547 removed this prohibition. In 2010, the original law that had addressed these pre-95 biomass RECs, there was a sentence added in there that essentially said these facilities had to register with REGIS prior to January 1 of 2011. There were certain facilities that either didn't register because they knew that they wouldn't be generating RECs until 2026. There is a cost to register. Some facilities registered and then let their registration expire because they weren't generating RECs. We are now in a place where we have a couple of facilities in the state. This doesn't bring any new facilities online because, again, we're talking about all pre-95 biomass facilities. But there are a handful, two of at least that we know of, that registered after January 1, 2011. And so really, while it looks like it's an entire paragraph of new language before you, all we're really doing is changing the law to say on or after January 1, 2011. There are no retroactive RECs that you'll be granting if this law goes into effect. It's all RECs generated after that registration date going forward. So as long as the facility was registered prior to, on or after January 1, 2011. And Irian Singer is here with me today. He serves as Biomass Counsel. So if there's any technical questions, I ask that you give him the hard ones.
Want to make any comments? Just respond.
No, I think Amanda did it perfectly. If you have any questions, I'm here to answer them if you have any.
Okay. Questions? Guess none. Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. That's all I had signed up. Does anybody else have a wish to comment on this? Don't see any, so we will close public hearing. We will open a work session on Senate Bill 328. Simple little thing.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 328 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 328 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, Senate Bill 328 moves to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation by unanimous vote of the committee. Who wants to carry? Senator Girard will carry. So we'll close on 328. We will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 334. Did I open a work session?
Yes.
I did.
Just really fast, Mr.
Chair.
Thank you. Senate Bill 334 directs the Oregon Department of Energy to develop and maintain an inventory of biogas and renewable natural gas resources available to the state. We have received as part of this, Mr. Chair, I believe Mr. Bauer will speak to it, a Dash 1 amendment. The Dash 1 amendment makes I have a lengthy list of changes that it makes that are in the staff measure summary, but I don't want to steal Mr. Bauer's thunder, so I will just refer to the staff measure summary for reference to that, Mr. Chair. We have not had a chance to get a fiscal revenue impact statement on this as we got the amendment this morning.
Okay. Mr. Bauer. There you are.
Thank you, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. I'm Gary Bauer, representing Northwest Natural. Northwest Natural is a natural gas distribution company. We serve approximately a little over 645,000 customers in Oregon. And we're here in support of Senate Bill 334 and the Dash 1 amendments. As Mr. Brennan pointed out, the bill is pretty basic. It just requires the Department of Energy to do an inventory and analysis of biogas and renewable natural gas. Biogas is basically the result of materials decomposing, breaking down, and creating a gaseous source. Among the gases that it puts off is methane. Methane is a basic ingredient in natural gas, which is one of the reasons we're very interested in that. Renewable natural gas is basically the process of taking that gas and conditioning or cleaning it up so that you can either put it in a pipeline and we could then distribute it to our customers, or it can be used in the transportation sector as a motor vehicle fuel. There are a number of environmental benefits to doing that. The other thing that the bill really, while the amendments look lengthy, the Legislative Council basically just chose, rather than kind of inserting some words, to basically just reprint the amendments as one entire document. So basically the bill requires the Department of Energy to do an analysis. It sets up an advisory committee so that others, including those of us in the natural gas business, as well as municipalities and others who are in the process of developing some of these biogases, can also participate. It has it report back to the legislature. The amendments also clarified that the report would be to the legislature. It makes the legislation effective 91 days after the bill is adopted. That's so that it directs the Department of Energy to actually start the process and then end the process during this interim. And it would repeal the bill on December 31st of 2018. Again, pretty simple. We would urge your support of the Dash 1 amendments in the legislation. Thank you.
Questions? Senator Riley.
Thank you. Do we know if there is a fiscal on this? Or?
We don't yet. We don't have one.
You don't know yet? Okay. Thank you.
Chair Beyer, if I might just quickly comment on that. The Department of Energy does have a section that does do analysis, and we worked with the department on putting this together. So it's our hope that there will not be a fiscal, but I know they have not completed that yet.
Senator Thompson.
Yeah. If Senator Girod can get a couple lines striked from that other bill, could I get lines 2, 3, and 4 striked from this bill, from the amendment?
And propose anything you want.
Okay. I don't want to see that happen.
You're happy? You're welcome to go get an amendment.
Okay. I'll work on that. Why would you? I just saw that this afternoon.
Doesn't mean anything. You can do that. Any other comments?
Any real comments?
Oh, I thought that was a real comment.
It is.
Seeing it. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Senator.
Is there anybody else who wishes to comment on Senate Bill 334? Seeing none, we do not have the paperwork, so we will close on that on 334, and we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 339. Patrick.
Let's see. Okay. Mr. Chair, thank you. Senate Bill 339. Caps electricity generated by any single biomass facility that may be used to meet the requirements that a certain percent of electricity in the state be generated by small-scale renewable energy products or biomass facilities. The measure has an emergency clause and so would take effect upon passage. We have received paperwork on the original bill. However, we have a Dash 1 amendment. The Dash 1 amendment clarifies the language in Section 1, Sub 3 regarding single facility nameplate capacity, Mr. Chair. And with that amendment, we have not received any paperwork on that as yet. So the bill is not ready to move today, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Mr. Jenks.
Chair Bob. Members of the committee, my name is Bob Jenks. I'm the executive director of the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. Last year, I testified and lobbied in this building quite a bit on Senate Bill 1547, the major energy legislation. That bill phased out coal for electricity. It doubled the Oregon renewable standard. It required utilities to develop electric vehicle programs and established a criteria to evaluate those programs, and it required the establishment of a community solar program. I'm buried right now in the implementation process of all these various pieces. This implicates everything from utility IRPs to how do we deal with the community solar, how do we implement those EV plans, and I don't want to say that it's overwhelming, but it's pretty close to overwhelming in the work that we've created for ourselves. And what I really wanted to say is you're not going to see me here asking you for a whole lot this session. Generally, I think from my viewpoint, the best thing we can do One Energy is create a pause and let us implement what we've already created last session. The one exception to that is this bill. This is just a technical fix. Small-scale renewables are defined in Oregon, and when we added the biogas through 1547 last year, we didn't retain that cap. So this just defines small-scale biomass the same way small-scale any other small-scale renewable is, and just puts the same limit on it. As far as I know, it doesn't implicate any projects in the state. It's just a sort of a housekeeping measure to clarify that. So and hopefully that's the only thing I'll be asking folks for in this building this year. So thank you. I'm welcome to answer any questions.
Thank you, Bob. Questions, Senator?
Yeah, the question is why do we want to put a cap on it? If our forests are burning up, it's a really good way to reduce the fire danger, and fire, a lot of people believe, is the number one carbon producer in this state. So I'm trying to understand why you want to cap biomass.
We don't want to cap biomass. This is the small scale. This is just defining what is small scale. In all units of renewables, there's large versions, there's utility scale, there's lots of different things. Some come in through QFs, through under purpose. So there's different ways different scale projects can come into the utility system and sell or participate in that system. And this is just defining that small scale is, I believe, 20 megawatts. This is just saying the same definition of small scale applies to biomass as would to wind or hydro or anything else. It's not an attempt to say you would never do any biomass that's not that's above that limit. It's simply defining the small scale nature of the small scale renewable program.
What?
No, I'm good.
Okay. See you there. Thank you, Bob.
Great. Thank you,
Doris Penwell.
Mr. Chair, members Welcome. Of the committee, I'm Doris Penwell from Association of Counties. I don't need to repeat the introduction that you had from the other witness, but I would like to say that this bill was introduced by a Community Renewable Energy Association, AOC, and with discussions with OFIC to be sure that we took care of that one fix in this Section 14 that everybody recognized needed to be done at the end of last session. To be fair, there are some other, quote, fixes we would like to make with this same section, but those discussions are taking place on the other side of the building, and at some point we hope that you will see those. This is one of those. This is part of that whole package. And I just want to say that in response to Senator Girard's comment, we definitely support, we want them all, we want lots of these kind of projects, big, little, whatever. We clearly have a lot of biomass in this state that we can use for generation and for heat. This cap is only for the cogen, which means heat and electricity. It's not a cap. That's all it talked about in this regard. So the cap in this particular section limits it to 20 megawatts of whatever size the plant may be, if it's a cogen plant. If you have any questions, I'd be glad
any
to answer.
Any questions? Senator?
Well, I'll just be real frank. I have a cogen plant that's up by me in Ferris Lumber Company. I have no idea what their capacity is, so why should I put a restriction? Maybe I'm reading this wrong, but it seems to me like I'm restricting the size that they can generate with their waste products.
Mr. Chair, Senator Girard, the language that's in this bill and as amended does not restrict what they do with their facility. All it does is restrict what is counted within the small-scale renewable portion that of energy that is sold by the electricity company or to and from the electricity company. It could be a 35-megawatt project. Only 20 megawatts of it can be counted as small-scale renewable. That's the way this language evolved as we developed it. So that plant or any others that might be developed are not limited.
Mm-hmm. But by the definition of small-scale, does that not get a higher rate for a buyback from the electric company than does a large-scale? Because you're saying it goes from small-scale to large-scale. A lot of it has to do with the rate that they're paid for the energy, does it not?
Mr. Chair, Senator Girard, I think perhaps it'd be better if the power company would answer that question. But I don't think if the bill
from PGE
before us,
why don't you help ask him that?
Oh, okay.
If the bill before us mandates a certain amount of electricity be in the small scale variety, that could be included in this. But we also want all other resources to be included in this as well. So we don't want to use it all up with biomass or cogen or something like that. Okay?
Okay. Senator Riley?
No, I'll wait.
Okay. Anybody else? Thank you, Doris.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Seaman. Front and center. Welcome, Varner.
Thank you. Senator Beyer, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Varner Seaman. I'm here today representing Portland General Electric. So let me take a stab at this. When passing Senate Bill 1547 last year, which members of the committee will remember sometimes referred to as the Coal to Clean Bill or the Oregon Clean Electricity or Coal Transition Plan, that bill did a number of things. One was to move us to a 50% renewables requirement by 2040. So 50% coming from wind, solar, geothermal, and for the first time we made biomass an eligible resource in real time. As Amanda was talking about earlier, biomass had counted post 2025. So we moved that up to biomass counted today as a renewable resource. One of the other things that the bill did is it changed the small-scale renewables requirement in statute. Prior to Senate Bill 1547 passing, there was a small-scale renewable requirement, which was defined as eligible renewable resources that were less than 20 megawatts in size. That went from being an 8% goal on an energy basis for all utilities statewide to an 8% capacity mandate for PGE and PacifiCorp. And biomass was included as one of the eligible resources to count towards that small requirement. What we realized pretty late one evening was that towards the end of the 2016 short session was the way that this provision, Section 14 of the bill, was drafted, any biomass could count towards this sub-20 megawatt category. Now, PGE has been working pretty hard. We agree with Senator Girard that we're pretty excited about the possibilities for biomass. We're looking to switch Boardman as a coal facility to potentially a peaker biomass facility. That's a 600 megawatt nameplate facility. If we were running that thing flat out, that would swamp the small scale category. So, frankly, it's in our interest to keep the language as it exists today. However, we made an agreement with Oregon Forest Industries Council, CREA, Portland General Electric, Pacific Power, Senator Edwards, Senator Beyer, who you all may be familiar with, Representative Jessica Vega Peterson, and Representative Johnson to come back in 2017 and get what we thought the intent was, which is to say, yep, we're excited about biomass. Biomass now counts as a renewable, but for this section, we're only going to let the first 20 megawatts from any facility count towards it so as to not kind of erode the credibility of this section of the statute. And there is a House version of this bill, House Bill 2133. We're working through that process. Frankly, we're happy to have this conversation now. I think we'd prefer that vehicle be the one that we're working with. So this is maybe a pre-hearing in our minds for what we expect to see with that. Of course, you're the ones with the votes. So happy to take any questions.
Senator?
You mentioned OFIC, but I don't see them out in the audience here. Do they support this, or is that just the agreement that they came up with?
Chair Beyer, Senator Girard, I believe that OFIC does, but I don't want to speak on their behalf. I've talked with Heath Curtis numerous times about this bill and about House Bill 2133 and reviewing language in those, and I believe that they are in support, but I don't want to go further than stating a belief. I don't want to have them speak on their own behalf.
You'll have a chance to ask that. We're not going to move this today.
Okay.
Senator Riley, do you have any questions? Anybody else? Thank you, Varner.
Thank you, sir.
And Nels Johnson.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Senator Beyer, members of the committee. My name is Nils Johnson. I'm here on behalf of Renewable Northwest. I don't have a whole lot to add to what's already been said, other than from our perspective, this is simply coming back to the legislature and honoring the agreement that we all made in the 2016 session in regards to 1547. We support this bill, and we urge your support as well. And I can take any questions you may have.
Any questions? Thank you.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
That's all I have who have signed up. Does anybody else wish to comment on Senate Bill 339? Seeing none, committee, we don't have the paperwork to move this today, and it's the chair's preference to wait and see what the House does on the whole issue of this section. And we'll watch that and see if that one comes over or not. So we will close the public work session on Senate Bill 339, and I think that takes us to the end of the agenda. Patrick, do we have anything else today?
Mr. Chair, we do not. I just got word from LFO. We're probably about 30 minutes out on a fiscal for Senate Bill 37. So maybe
we'll
roll
it over to the next. So we will, just to be clear, we're rolling over Senate Bill 37 to our next meeting. Okay. Anything else? If not, adjourned. If not, adjourned. Okay.